always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine, well, I don't know what you want to call it. I mean, it's like a great Mother's Day. I hope everybody had a great Mother's Day today and a great Mother's Day weekend. But, you know, for Lakers fans, probably not the best Sunday we've ever had, seeing as the Lakers are probably 24-ish hours or so from their season ending, it certainly feels like. But, yeah, it is certainly a Sunday, is what I will definitely say. On this Sunday, which is brought to you in part by Prize Picks, use that promo code HMA and play a $5 lineup and get $50 worth of free lineups on Prize Picks. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the Lakers being down 0-3. We're going to talk kind of quickly about the game that game three and what I kind of saw from it. And then, you know, obviously look ahead to tomorrow's game four. But I also want to talk about the lottery results and the way that that could shape the league here for a long time coming. And then when I did, I did this right after the lottery, and there were evidently a lot of people online. And so I was like, and by the way, if you guys see my eyes darting around the screen, I have the Minnesota game over there. I have Twitter up over here just in case anything kind of breaks in the meantime. I also am trying to do a lot more on this channel to provide you a reason for being here visibly. And that just requires some on-air production. So you're going to see my eyes kind of navigating that while I talk. But anyway, I sent a tweet out after the lottery asking for questions. It had been a long time since I went to Twitter for questions. And, today you guys came through. Holy cow, did you guys come through? By my count, we have basically 15 questions now. Or we have 15 replies to the tweet. I might have some people muted. So if you don't see your tweet there, hit me up and we'll figure out what's up there. You guys know I am quick with the block button. I'm quick with the mute button. People just get too nasty online and I just have no patience for that. But if you guys have any questions and stuff like that, that maybe you don't see covered in the Twitter Q&A, I go ahead and drop them in the comment section and I'll try to get to as many of those as I possibly can as well. So without any further ado, please hit that subscribe button. Please turn on notifications for the show and for YouTube. Please hit that like button as well. If you guys are listening in the morning via podcast, please subscribe wherever it is that you get those, preferably on Odyssey, but it all works the same for me. Let's go ahead and dive on in, starting with game three. So the final of game three was 131-108. And honestly, for much of the second half, it just was not a competitive game. Oklahoma City outscored the Lakers 33-20 in the third, and then they outscored the Lakers 41-29 in the fourth. And It reminded me of how teams looked against the bubble Lakers, the 2020 Lakers, where they used to just wear down teams. And it would be physically, it would be psychologically, it would just be this war of attrition playing against that Lakers team. And eventually you would start to see shoulders drop a little bit. A lot of walking around between possessions, not much communication, a lot of 1,000-yard stares. And in that second half, and this is a game, remember that the Lakers were up at halftime. They're up two going into the half. And yet it was, for one thing, immediately a dunk from OKC. LeBron answered, and then it was just a steady stream of bucket after bucket after bucket, stop after stop after stop. AJ Mitchell driving around anybody that he wanted to, specifically Austin Reeves a lot. And the Lakers just got handled. And it sucked to watch. This series has really sucked to watch. It's one of the more one-sided history. This honestly might be, I'd have to go back and look at the actual scores from the Lakers-Spurs series right after the Lakers lost Kobe to that Achilles tear. But this might wind up being one of, if not the most lopsided series in Lakers history. Now, obviously, there's no Luka. Obviously, the Thunder were a bad matchup for the Lakers, whether they had Luka or not. He played some of his ugliest games this season against the Thunder. So it's kind of hard to say, like, oh, yeah, he would. You just inject him into the series and the Lakers win this thing. Nope, not willing to go that far. I think this series has been absolutely critical in telling the Lakers and in teaching the Lakers in the front office how far they have to go. Not just from a roster standpoint, by the way. I think the coaching needs to get a lot better. You know, I think JJ has been excellent all year, and I think he has done just about everything you could possibly try to do in this series. And at the end of the day, he just doesn't quite have the horses. But, you know, I would, there are still some things I would like to see him dial up, and it's taken him a little while to dial some of those things up. I think more importantly than coaching, though, front office to front office and organization to organization, the Thunder and Lakers is it's just night and day. And it was funny because while I was setting up the show, right after I kind of set up the show, the very first comment I see, right, is from Mr. Burns, who apparently is a older OKC fan, beat by a better organization and roster. And this is what's been really funny about this series is Thunder fans swear up and down as if they are so like crazy disrespected, especially by like specifically by Lakers fans. If we point out that we think the refereeing sucks, that does not mean that we do not think that your team is good and or that like the Lakers would be winning the series if only for these referees. No, the Thunder are clearly a lot better at basically everything pertaining to basketball, and especially as the Lakers are currently constituted. And this has just been an absolute ass kicking, right? Like that's what JJ Redick said after the game. This has been a butt kicking, and you can do one of two things. If you get your butt kicked, right? You can get your butt kicked and decide, all right, never fighting again. Never playing that game again, never facing that big bad boss ever again. I finished the game where I finished the game, and you try to move on from there. Or you know, this game really, or this series has really kind of reminded me, I don't know how many of you guys play Assassin's Creed, but in Assassin's Creed or in a lot of the Assassin's Creed games, especially recently, bosses or opponents, right? Ops that you play against, they'll have a rating over their head. And if you just start out the game and you go and try and fight somebody with like a rating way higher than you currently sit at, right? You start the game at one, you'll have bosses and characters whose ratings sit at like in the way up there. I think it almost goes up to the hundreds in the most recent Assassin's Creed games. And if you try to play against one of those bosses whose rankings are way better than you, it is one or two hits and it's over, right? it is one or two hits and you're like, oh, okay. All right. I'm done. All right, cool. And what you wind up having to do, right, is wandering around the world and upgrade your character and upgrade your equipment and get better at playing the game and all that stuff. And then eventually you can make your way into those regions with those characters that are leveled way higher than you used to be. And then, depending on how good you are at the game, you can beat those characters. And that's essentially what this series has been, is the Lakers are just starting out really in the Luka Doncic era. They are literally just starting out in the Mark Walter era. And they have a lot of work to catch up to the big bad boss that the Oklahoma City Thunder have become, both as a current roster, but also probably more importantly, as an organization outright. And this series, when it's all said and done, can either be the beginning of Rob Pelinka and the people who he employs getting their shit together and working to catch up to where the Oklahoma City Thunder currently reside, or this could be the series or the beginning of that process that Mark Walter takes a look at the Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss and that cast of characters and says, all right, I got to upgrade, and we'll see what direction this path eventually leads to. But I do think this series is absolutely critical, and that it's taught us how far the Lakers have to go. And so to like Thunder fans who were saying, oh, you're disrespecting this, and dude, I don't like watching Shai Gilgeous-Alexander play. I don't like watching the Oklahoma City Thunder play. I think they game the system and they've bastardized my favorite sport, and the referees play along, right? They get fooled. That doesn't mean I don't think they're good. That doesn't mean I think they're fraudulent. That doesn't even mean I think that they have to do that stuff to win. Part of what drives me nuts is that the significantly better team resorts to that nonsense, right? It would be like watching Mike Tyson fight Joe Schmo, right? Some random dude, and then kick that dude in the nuts. They're like, what? Just beat his ass the way that we know that you could beat that guy's ass. This series has taught me that maybe the Lakers need to head down that path and maximize their opportunity at winning series like this, by way of some of those shenanigans, or they need to get so good that they don't have to do those things and they can beat the Thunder or the Spurs or the Wolves or the Nuggets straight up. And, in a second, I'm going to get into, Austin, because I think there's an interesting conversation going on around him. But kind of more generally, the game played out the way that it did. Rui was excellent again. LeBron looked exhausted, 48 hours after playing in their recent game, with some of that time taken up by travel. Marcus Smart was a little, quiet again. Ayton was brutal. Hayes was brutal, to the point where I have basically decided the starting point of this offseason is the center position. But overall, the game was the game. Lakers got their butt kicked, and now it's about, depending on how tomorrow goes, which I think we kind of know how it's probably going to go. Now the work begins to level up your character, get back to this region at some point, soon, hopefully, and test out your skills and test out the upgrades that you amass over the time between now and whenever it is you see this Thunder team again. Really quickly, D-Russ, the lesson, the legend, love Assassin's Creed, but prefer the old school versions with Altair and Ezio. The Ezio storyline is probably my favorite collection of video games maybe ever. Just incredible storytelling, beautiful game. I know that they're going back and they're redoing Black Flag, but I would love for them to go back and do exactly what they're doing with Black Flag, but with the Ezio storyline. I'm with you though, as far as the Assassin's Creed games. Like I would like for Assassin's Creed and their developers to kind of go back to more stealth. I think the worst versions of this game are the hack and slash versions. One thing that was kind of fun about this one is that you kind of got to choose either or. You could be this tank as I'm forgetting what the character's name is. You could either be a tank or you can be an assassin. And depending on what level you were playing or which spot did you like, that was kind of a fun wrinkle. But I would kind of like to see them really focus on upgrading the stealth version of this game, putting all of their chips and all of their eggs into that basket, and seeing if you can get better that way. All right, so let's go ahead and talk about Austin. And so Austin yesterday was doing something interesting. Now he finished the game 39 minutes, 17 points. He shot 5 of 13 from the field, 1 of 5 from 3-point range. Did get to the free throw line 8 times and made 6 of those. He also dished out 9 assists. But also dished out 5 turnovers. And I think, you know, in going back and watching it, the comparison or the contrast between the results of plays where Austin stayed in control, got to the free throw line, got into that like mid-range area, and either, you know, dished out some kind of a pass or looked for his mid-range jumper, that version of Austin was just so much better than the Austin who kept on trying to put his head down and get all the way to the rim. He was also, you know, spent basically the whole game visibly frustrated with the referees. I did think eventually he got kind of carried away, and that kind of took his focus away from the game itself. But I walk away from this game in this series asking one question, and it's nothing against Austin personally. It's a difficult question to answer because I think we kind of sort of all know the response, but I keep on asking myself, is it possible for the Lakers to get as athletic as they need to get, as quick as they need to get, as explosive as they need to get, as physical as they need to get, while you employ an Austin Reeves and Luka Doncic backcourt? And like in this game, AJ Mitchell was running circles around Austin, offensively and defensively. And he's on a 3-year, $9 million contract. Austin is about to embark on probably at the minimum a 3-year, $90 million contract. And, you know, if you're competing against that team, and one of the starting points as far as like the allocation of resources across your cap sheet is Austin being paid 10 times more than AJ Mitchell, the guy who is pretty thoroughly outplayed him all series, that makes it tough to catch up in the ways that the Lakers need to catch up. So I find myself asking that question about the athleticism, about the speed and length and defense that you're seeing across, especially the Western Conference playoffs. I'm watching Spurs Wolves right now, and it's a freaking bare knuckle knockdown, drag out fight. It's in, like, I watched Kamaev and Strickland last night, the UFC fight, and Wolves Spurs is on that level, like, as far as physicality and it's just, it's crazy. And can the Lakers get to that point while you basically pay Luka and Austin $90 to $100 million per year between the two of them? I don't know, man. I probably don't think so. So Now you could say, all right, well, can you make up for that athleticism everywhere else? How? Like a center who is athletic enough to make up for those guys, you aren't just going to find that person walking around. The closest thing to that would be Jackson Hayes. He was a disaster yesterday and has been marginally playable for, if not playable for most of his playoff career. So, like, I don't know what you do with, like, that assortment of spots. You have Rui Hachimura, who has been excellent in this series, like, legitimately eye-opening how good this guy has continued to be in the playoffs. And he's been so good that I say, got to bring that guy back, which I think most people would probably agree with. But if you bring him back, that's another spot where you are probably not, or you are definitely not, as fast and athletic as you need to be, or anywhere near as fast or athletic as the Thunder are collectively. So that means all of your athleticism is going to have to reside in your small forward. But if you're going to get a small forward who can space the floor and also be that athletic, that's a damn near max level player. Do you have the assets to be able to go out and get that guy? I don't know. So, yeah, I find myself just kind of, you know, rolling through these hypotheticals and looking ahead at this Lakers offseason. And either the Lakers need to change their approach and find a way to pay Austin, but also turn him into a player who is athletic enough to compete at this level, or one of two things, preferably both, happen. Luka and Austin come back next year and are knock down unconscious three-point shooters, off the dribble, off the catch, automatic. They have to be at that level if they want to mitigate against the athletic deficiency or deficit that they are playing at night in, night out. Or those guys, or preferably and those guys, show up in even better shape than they were this year and sincerely focus on defense over the course of the season so that you can be as good as you can possibly be offensively to keep up with OKC, but also not leak points by way of teams targeting Luka and Austin. And if this is the zillion-dollar question that I know you guys have for any time I ask for questions, are those things possible? Are those things realistic? Is that something that the Lakers should hope for? Legitimately don't know, which probably means no. And how the Lakers manage that situation and what direction they take this roster in as a result of answering that question honestly, and I mean brutally honestly, right? Like, this is one of the things that I talked to Ryan West about on the show, was about how brutally honest Jerry was and why that made him, or what, why that was part of what made him such an incredible basketball mind and such an incredible executive. He was brutally honest about the direction that his team was going, his teams would go in or was going in. He was brutally honest about the job that he was doing. He was brutally honest about the jobs that everybody else was doing. And when it came time to make that difficult decision, or not make that difficult decision, he did so with nothing else in mind but what is best for the Lakers or what is best for the team that he was running. And one thing that I think is a very fair criticism of Rob Pelinka over the years is I don't think he is capable of being brutally honest about the job or about his wins, right? His organizational wins. And I think he can often be overly biased against wins that weren't his, right? Alex Caruso comes to mind, Caruso wasn't a Rob Pelinka win. Caruso was gone very shortly thereafter. But you look at decisions that Rob has made that were considered wins at the time, and it's very, he'll either, you know, pay them, you know, contracts that extend maybe a year or two beyond what they should be paid. It'll be, he'll find it difficult to trade those players away. You know, it's one of those spots that Rob really needs to improve at, is being brutally honest about players that at one point in time were seen as organizational wins. And I think here with Austin, it's going to be super fascinating to see how this all plays out, where Austin is objectively an incredible basketball story, a big time win for the Los Angeles Lakers organizationally. But it's probably also time to be brutally honest about what this dude's future is and what kind of team the Lakers, like what the goal is here. Is the goal to be a cool story factory, or is the goal here to be a champion? Multi-time champion, get back to Lakers exceptionalism as it previously existed. No more of this lead brick painted gold bullshit. We got to get back to first getting rid of that lead from the outside or from the inside, and then eventually replacing it with solid gold presences. And it's going to be really interesting here with Austin. Look, it's exhausting for every single playoff game to be some grand sweeping statement about Austin as a basketball player. I know who Austin is. I think he's an excellent basketball player. I think he is put in a brutal spot because this roster isn't where it needs to be. And I also think he is at times a little too easy to target defensively. And the ways that the Thunder have kind of done it, obviously you have A.J. Mitchell kind of going by him a bunch, but they've also taken full advantage of the Lakers switching all over the court, and they've really kind of focused on, as Krangis has been pointing out, making Austin the low man and making Austin a primary rim defender, and there's no way in hell Austin would be good in that spot. So, yeah, you know, look, if you pay off one of the arguments or best arguments for paying Austin is that every year he has been in the league, he has improved noticeably and tangibly in the ways that we are hoping he would improve from year to year. And even after he got his most recent contract, there was never any concern that this dude was going to lose his edge because he got paid. And if he gets paid in the way that he has been talked about getting paid all year, I am not at all concerned that dude is going to stop putting in the work. I am a little concerned about his fit on this specific team with this specific superstar in Luka Doncic. And Luka clearly isn't going anywhere. But anybody who doesn't fit absolutely perfectly with Luka, the Lakers do, again, have to be brutally honest about where they need to take this roster, with Austin on it or not. All right, let's dive really quickly into the lottery results. And it was a bit of a doozy. So let's see if I have the right one here. Nope, wrong one. Shoot. Dang it, I was doing so good. All right, there's the lottery results. Number one came in. The Washington Wizards win the lottery and have their choice between A.J. Dibonsa, and Cam Boozer and Darren Peterson and so on and so forth, as far as, you know, where they want to take their organization from here on out. Number two, the Jazz come in. They actually finally jump. This is, I think, the highest that the Jazz have picked since 1987. That is a really, really long time. The Memphis Grizzlies come in at third. Really kind of annoyed that you have two West teams in the top three in this draft. I would really prefer that more talent go East. Bulls come in at fourth. Clippers come in at five. Absolute heartbreak here for the Indiana Pacers as they lose the number five pick as part of that Ivica Zubac trade. It was so devastating that their GM was out there apologizing on Twitter for making this gamble. Tough look. And then the Nets, I think they fell in this draft. The Kings also fell in this draft to number seven. The Hawks jump up to number eight by way of their trade with the New Orleans Pelicans. The Mavs come in at nine. The Bucks come in at 10. The Warriors come in at 11. The Thunder do not, thankfully, jump that high into this draft. They still have a lottery pick, but it is at number 12, the Heat at 13, and the Hornets at 14. So I think it's important that the Warriors didn't jump too high for the Lakers. I think it's really notable that the Clippers jump all the way up to five for a couple of reasons. One, it means that the Clippers are going to add a very, very, very good young and cost-controlled player to their roster. It also could mean, and there's a ton of speculation going on about this in league circles, this also could mean that Adam Silver could swoop in based on the results of this aspiration investigation whenever it's finally done. Adam Silver could swoop in and take care of business here and just yank that pick. Now, I don't think he should send it back to Indiana. They made the trade and they made their bed. They have to sleep in losing that pick. But I would be probably fine with everybody else just moving up and basically just having 29 picks in the third in the first round of this year's draft, because the Clippers, I think, pretty clearly colluded to break so many rules in this CBA. So I think that I think it would be a really bad look for the league to let the Clippers keep their pick. There's just no way that they can be rewarded. Now, they made a great trade. And I get maybe rewarding them, or, you know, maybe they should be rewarded for making that trade and it working out and that gamble working out in their favor. But I do think that, like, if basically you, let them make this pick, continue on moving forward without any real ramifications for, circumventing the cap to an extent that we have never seen before. After, by the way, you've already fined this Clippers organization for circumventing the cap. Previously, because of what they did with DeAndre Jordan, or what they proposed to do with DeAndre Jordan. If you allow them to keep this pick and they just move on that way, it would suck in the short term for teams that have to compete with them. But I think it would suck a lot more in the long term for teams that have to compete with the Lakers, because if they're allowed to circumvent the cap to the extent that the Clippers did with Kawhi Leonard over what seems like the extent of the time that he has been in their organization, then it's a wild, wild west, and the Lakers and we stand to benefit from it. So that's the lottery. As far as like impact on Lakers options here, the Jazz keeping number two, I think, is something that is worth kind of monitoring here. Not saying that the Lakers would try to jump up and trade excuse me, for the number two pick. I'm saying that with the Jazz, like, they right now, they have Keontae George, they have Ace Bailey, Walker Kessler, and then they're also going to have whoever they take it to here. That right there is a pretty damn good young core. And then they also have some kind of periphery players as well. They're trying to, again, do that two timeline thing here where you have that young collection of talent and they're trying to, you know, kind of make that mesh with current talent, right? The Jaren Jackson Juniors of the world and Lauri Markkanen. Sometimes it works out, you know, sometimes, you know, those young guys are ready early enough that that team can go on a run and really compete. It's not impossible, but I do think eventually it would be wise for Utah to kind of pick a route here. So does that make Lauri Markkanen available? Does that make Jaren Jackson Jr. available? If they're interested in bridging that gap, but don't want to have so much money dedicated to their front court, with those high lottery contracts sitting there as ticking time bombs on their cap sheet, do they blush at the you know, max level offer for Walker Kessler? So it's you know, for the Lakers, I think the Jazz are a team to watch. I think the Bulls are a team to watch, right? They're going to get this top four, you know, the number four pick, whoever they take there. Makes all the world, all the sense in the world for them to continue to tank and see if they can pair that number four prospect with another couple of really high prospects here moving forward. So does that make some guys available on their roster? I think the Kings are an interesting situation just because they're so dumb that you just never know what they're going to do. And they have some guys on that roster who I think if put in a better situation might fit into winning situations more than they have shown so far. And you know, kind of so on and so forth. But yeah, fascinating lottery. Glad that we haven't had to care about that in a long time. All right. The next thing that we have to get to is your questions. So we're going to do this again. Again, I'm trying to make this work as best I can. So is this the one? All right. So I asked for questions and you guys came through. I'm going to start with the order that I see him here. So Jason Kelly asked, could you walk us through what the cap sheet will look like heading into next year? Say we re-sign Rui with a raise somewhere around $26 million, re-sign Austin at $40 million, and bring back Braun at $28 million. Let Marcus walk. It's not up to the Lakers. Bring back Luke on a slight raise. We don't even have cap space at that point, right? Well, I'm going to lean on friend of the show, Yossi. And here's the Lakers books as it stand right now, right? So you have Luka on the books. You have Austin on the books. Now, Austin is going to opt out of his player option here. You have Jared Vanderbilt on the books for what feels like perpetuity. DeAndre Ayton is probably going to opt in to his $8.1 million player option. Jake LaRavia is still on the books for $6 million again next year. Marcus Smart has... I know we're kind of frustrated with the series he's having against Oklahoma City, although the plus-minus would indicate he's been not terrible. But he's probably opting out of that money. So, you know, to the question asker's point, you know, you could, I guess, just let him walk. And I would like Marcus back personally, but I guess this person would rather keep Luke Kennard over Marcus Smart. You have Dalton on the books for $4.2 million next year. I don't think he makes it as a Laker through this offseason. You have your 25th pick, right? And his salary already slotted in right here. And then you have team options on Nick Smith Jr. and Bronny James. And also a partial guarantee, I believe, on Bronny. And then you have a dues money here. So as that stands, that is, you know, it adds up to 110 million, 110.6 million bucks. That puts you well below the luxury tax. That puts you well below the you know, you have a lot of room there. Unlikely bonuses. This is a lot of stuff. So as it stands, according to Yossi, it stands at 92 point whatever million bucks. Now that doesn't include cap holds. So you have LeBron has a giant cap hold. You have Austin has a cap hold for about 20 something million bucks. You have, you have like Luke Kennard is going to have a cap hold in the like $14 million range. And then Rui has a cap hold for 18 times 1.5 is 26 or so. And so like, you know, you have some decisions and as far as like what it would look like if you brought that many guys back, yeah, you aren't going to have, you're going to have your exceptions. Basically, you aren't going to be able to go out and sign a good free agent with any of the space that the Lakers have been, you know, holding on to for the last few years. You aren't going to be able to benefit by way of trade, from your cap space that you've been holding on to like Smeagol for the last couple of years. And I'm just of the opinion, and I think it's really important that the Lakers played the series against Oklahoma City. I'm of the opinion that they can't bring that many guys back. I'm sorry. I like Luke Kennard. Really fun story while it was fun, but I'm good. Unless he's willing to come back for like less than he made this year, which probably not. Rui, I do think, needs to be back for the post LeBron era. LeBron himself has a difficult decision as well. We'll see what he decides to do. It's funny. I right before I came on the air, had somebody ask me if I could do a radio hit for them tomorrow. And they're gonna ask me about LeBron's future. And my like response is, it's up to him, but it's also up to the Lakers whether they want him back. And that has been kind of difficult to hammer down from them. If they're ever asked about it, they're always like, well, you know, it's LeBron's decision to make. They've never, I don't think, at any point said, we want LeBron with no other disclaimers. And until I hear that from them, I'm not going to just write his name in ink anywhere. And then, yeah, like you have the Austin decision and how much money he signs for. The nice thing with Austin is because he's making what he's making right now, you have a relatively small cap hold. So you could kind of sit on his, you know, incoming raise and then just kind of roll things out from there. But yeah, the cap situation, this is a cap situation. This is what it looks like when your president of basketball operations is so adamant about optionality. Next question here comes from Tyler Nyzinski. What do you think should be the Lakers' plan A going into the offseason? Plan A should be getting a center who makes Luka better, who is good enough for Luka to make better, is athletic enough to keep up with the Oklahoma cities of the world. Look at all of the teams playing right now. Currently, you have the San Antonio Spurs, who have a literal alien, feels like, on their roster at center. And also, by the way, as if Victor Wembanyama isn't enough, his backup, they spent $13 million a year on Luke Kornet, who's been excellent for them this year. I was so pissed when they got Luke Kornet. It was such a Spurs acquisition because it was so effing smart. And they paid him like basically like a dollar more than the exceptions that the Lakers had available to them. And you know, they're thrilled that they did it. In the team that they're playing against right now, the Minnesota Timberwolves, you have Rudy Gobert and you have Julius Randle and Naz Reid. Like, that's a shit ton of money devoted to the four and the five spots, but it's also a shit ton of physicality. And it's a group that is, you know, pushing San Antonio right now as I'm recording, it's 97, 95 here. But it's a group that beat the piss out of the Denver Nuggets by way of physicality. It's a group that turns up every single postseason, and we'll see what they do, you know, as they get nearer the aprons and stuff like that. But like, the center spot isn't exactly something that they have ignored or tried to, you know, put a Band-Aid on a bullet wound with, you know. You look in the East, right? You have Jalen Duren and Isaiah Stewart for Detroit. You have Jared Allen and Evan Mobley for Cleveland. You have Karl-Anthony Towns and Mitchell Robinson for the Knicks. The Sixers were just eliminated, but obviously they have Joel Embiid, and he was the reason that they beat Boston to get to the second round. Like, they're gone are the days where the Lakers could basically just give out a couple of minimum contracts and hope that it works out. That is not how this is going to play out anymore. So to me, plan A, upgrade at center, whether that's making a max level offer to Walker Kessler, whether that's trading Vando, Jake, whatever, and whatever salary needs to go out for that center and whatever draft compensation needs to go out. Maybe you get lucky and you're able to draft one of your centers of the future, you know, with the 25th pick this year. That'd be cool. But no matter what, like, plan A, and frankly, plan A's, B, and C have to feature a significant upgrade at center. The next question here comes from Mitchell, who writes, what signings this offseason would make you truly believe the Lakers could have an actual chance against OKC or San Antonio with Reeves as a max player and number two option? Well, so I've been curious about Ayu Dosunmu and his contract. I believe he's a free agent this year. Oh, we have rain and lightning right outside the house. Fantastic. Come on, internet. All right. So 25-26 season, he is currently, yes, making $7.5 million. And he will be an unrestricted free agent after this year. The Minnesota Timberwolves as a team are very expensive. So either, like, if they want to keep Dosunmu, they're going to have to make a decision on, like, Julius Randle or Rudy Gobert. Obviously, Anthony Edwards isn't going anywhere. He's also going to be really expensive. Naz Reid is another guy who could be available depending on what choice they make here between Dosunmu, Randle, or Gobert. And then maybe, just maybe, Dosunmu shakes loose and you're able to get him for, like, I would probably pay him $15 million a year, maybe a little more. And basically have him be like your everyday Marcus Smart, with Marcus Smart hopefully also coming off of the bench. I would go to LeBron and I would say, look, if you go to a different team, you're going to be paid at most the mid-level exception. Look, I know LeBron has played at a damn near max level contract, if not outright a max level contract, this postseason. He won the Lakers that series against Houston, and he's the reason the Lakers ever have any chance in any stretch against OKC. But he's also 42, and he also missed a whole bunch of time this year, and he's not getting any younger next year, and his options are, he just doesn't have very many options. So if the Lakers, like, I would still say it's really important that you navigate those treacherous waters with tact and with understanding and empathy for how frustrating the spot might be for LeBron. But if you can talk him into a reasonable enough contract so that you can have access to your player exceptions as well, and then you also, like I said, trade Vando and Jake and all of the guys, like Maxie won't be a Laker next year. Like basically the Lakers have to extend their rotation. They need to enter next year with like a 12-man rotation. So Dalton's got to go. Bronny has to get a lot better. Thero has to be ready to play next year. And on top of that, you need to turn Vando and Jake and Dalton and whatever draft compensation you have to into another rotation level player. And so if you basically, if all of this goes right, you know, turn those guys into a center and you go into next year with Austin, Io, Luka, LeBron, and that center with Rui and Marcus. And I'm guessing Ayton is probably back on his player, on his player option. And then you have Thero and Bronny. And if you make that 25th pick selection and that player is ready to go as well, you use your player exceptions to bring in another rotation player or two. Now you have a 12-man rotation with Bronny, Thero, and your first round pick potentially this year as reinforcements over the course of the year. Drew Timmy probably back on a two-way contract. Nick Smith Jr. probably back on a two-way contract. And now all of a sudden you're cooking with you know, gasoline, I think is a cliche. Gasoline. Although eating food cooked in gasoline doesn't sound great. Michael Dang writes, doesn't have to be today, but we always list players that got 40 mil like Tyler Hero, etc., to get an idea of what Reeves will make. None of those teams with those players get very far in the playoffs during that contract. What do you think is fair for Reeves? And then they throw out the number $30 million. So this is my thing, right? Like in all of the conversations I have about Austin's upcoming contract, those examples come up, Emmanuel Quickley, Tyler Hero, so on and so forth. And I say, look, just because other teams gave out bad contracts doesn't mean that the Lakers should. Now, if that's the approach that you're taking, then you have to be willing to lose Austin to some other team. I'm always told that Atlanta is this like lurking factor potentially for Austin. And then who knows what Chicago or like Sacramento might do. But like, I don't like in today's CBA, basically deciding what a player should make based on overpaid players elsewhere who have put a ceiling on their teams with their contract. And by the way, I don't like talking like this about this. I wish these aprons didn't exist. I wish Austin could just get paid like guys used to get paid in yesteryear. I wish this was just a matter of luxury taxes and, you know, cause that's what it would be, right? Austin is a bird rights player. The Lakers in the previous CBA would be able to go above the luxury tax to pay this dude and stay up there so long as they think that they are championship contenders. And this would be done. Like he would be getting ready to be signing his max extension as soon as the time came for it. But in today's CBA and with these aprons and with how punitive they become and how they limit how you quite like literally how you can build a roster, you do have to be so effing smart about what you do here. So I can, you know, I hate counting, like I hate, you know, counting other people's paychecks and rubbernecking other people's paychecks and what they can make and stuff. I would also contend that you could live quite comfortably off of $30 million or $25 million a year, as will generations and generations of people who follow you down the line will also live very, very, very comfortable lives. But like at the end of the day, my priority is for the Lakers to be the best basketball team that they can possibly be. And if you're playing in the same conference as a team that has AJ Mitchell on it for $3 million a year, then you have to be that kind of shrewd when it comes to the contracts that you hand out. And that unfortunately means you're going to have a awkward conversation with LeBron James. You're going to have an awkward conversation with Rui. You're going to have an awkward conversation with Austin. And the more comfortable you become with those awkward conversations and the more productive that those conversations can become, that's how you, you know, climb the ladder of front offices throughout this league. And that's something that the Lakers have to get better at. All right. Next question here comes from at Hamas Tarek. Any interest from LAL on trading for AD? Could send a couple of contracts out like Vando, Jake, and Dalton and absorb AD's salary into the cap space. Feels like his value is low enough, especially with Washington getting that number one pick. I don't think the Lakers are really interested in the Anthony Davis business. There was some frustration there at the tail end of his time there with his conditioning, with his kind of basketball focus, that, you know, people within that organization, within the Lakers, were pretty consistently kind of frustrated with his availability and had questions about whether that could be tied to his work ethic in the offseason and his conditioning and his attentiveness to his body. And it's especially difficult for you to have those questions about Anthony Davis while you have a 40-something-year-old LeBron somehow more available consistently than AD was. So I don't see an AD return, and I definitely don't see an AD return while he is on his current contract. It is a big one. And also, by the way, he's expecting a max extension, which is up there in the range of like 60 mil a year. And he's an excellent basketball player. The comment here at the bottom is absolutely correct in pointing out that Anthony Davis is a champion with the Lakers. He 100% is one of my, like, legitimately, when he was right, one of my favorite players ever to watch. He is so effing good when he's right. Problem is, he's not right frequently enough. And as a result, the Lakers had questions before they traded Luka or traded AD for Luka. They had questions about Anthony Davis's conditioning, his availability, all that stuff. So if it wouldn't have been Luka, there's probably a pretty good chance that AD would have been traded somewhere down the line anyway. And I just don't see, while Anthony Davis is making the amount of money that he is making and expects to continue making that amount of money, I just don't think a return is in the cards. All right. The next one here comes from Three Level Scorer. Which center could or should the Lakers target? I've been pestering you guys with tweets about Jared Allen, same age as Luka, very good defender and a lob threat. Sensible salary could be available. Yes. Cleveland's cap situation is not great, to say the least. I think they did just enough work to dip under the second apron. And if they didn't, then that they are that limited, you know, that much more limited going into this summer. And it's that real, real bad combination of being super expensive and also not really feeling like you have a chance at winning a championship. So I do think at some point change is going to start happening there in Cleveland. There have been some rumblings that maybe Kenny Atkinson's time in Cleveland is, you know, running short. I think that would be a mistake. You know, like, I think he's an excellent coach, and I think this is more of a roster problem. I think it's more of a Donovan Mitchell, James Harden problem. Before it was Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland. I think Evan Mobley isn't quite the player that, like, they thought he was going to be this far into his career. I think that is a bigger factor than whoever their coach might be. But at the end of the day, if Cleveland goes into this offseason and makes a decision, all right, it's time to start getting a little cheaper here and there. And they say, give us a first round pick and, like, I don't know. Yeah, give us a first and a second and nothing else for Jared Allen so that we can become that much cheaper, that much more flexible, whatever. Then I think you have to listen to that if you're the Lakers. Now, if you do that, then that severely limits the number of guys that you can bring back. Now, if you do that, Kennard is gone probably. You kind of have to hope that Marcus opts out. You kind of have to hope that Ayton opts out, makes it, you know, like you get really expensive if you bring back all three of Austin, LeBron, and Rui and also make that deal. Ideally, you try to send out Dalton so that you can kind of cut into the amount of money that you don't have to spend on the way out. Maybe Jake is also included in there so that, like, the Lakers, you know, they shed some salary and some minutes and stuff like that. And, you know, this way, if you're Cleveland, you say, all right, we traded Jared Allen for a first, a second, a former first round lottery pick in Dalton and a, or near lottery pick in Dalton and a, 22-year-old wing or a 23-year-old wing who is making $6 million as an expiring contract next year. Like, maybe that's enough to sell to your fans as you kind of embark on some form of a rebuild or at least retooling. And you know, maybe that's the argument that Rob tries to make to them. But I like Jared Allen, and I think he's a little thin. I think he's a little movable. And I think part of that team's limitations is how movable he is. And I think that leads to some rebounding concerns sometimes and just like overall physicality concerns. But, you know, given the there isn't a ton of center options out there, he's one of the better ones. All right. We are an hour in and I haven't gotten to at least a few super comments. Let me just kind of scroll through here. I know I just saw one, so I'm going to get to that one first to make sure I get it. There's one. And all right, cool. All right. So first and foremost, most important sound on the show. Fuck Washington! A reminder also, by the way, that this show is brought to you in part by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and you will get a $50 worth of free lineups when you play a $5 lineup using that promo code. Let's jump back into the mailbag and all of those settings and blah, 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 blah. All right. So the comment that we have here, the super comment that we had from earlier, Marley Villasenor wrote, SGA is a great player, but I just can't see him as best in the world. Doesn't pass the eye test for that label. Never seen an MVP not have to play great and his team still be successful regardless. Best in the world is wide open. Yeah, I mean, like, I think he's in the conversation. Like, he is undoubted. Like, he does a lot of things that make that team tick. And, you know, over the course of this series, he hasn't played well statistically, but the amount of attention that the Lakers have dedicated to making sure he doesn't get going has made life a lot easier for AJ Mitchell, and it's made life a lot easier for Chet and all of their spot-up shooters. It does make me wonder if the Lakers might play him a little bit more straight up and just like kind of dare him to beat them single-handedly this late into the series. If you're going to do that, I would really prefer that you have Jared Vanderbilt available, but I don't think that is necessarily in the cards. And it also really, really hurts that Jake LaRavia has fallen off to the extent that he is no longer really in the rotation. So do you even have the defenders to defend Shea straight up? It's tough, man. But best in the world, I think it's between Shea, Luka, and oh my God, what are Minnesota doing? Shea, Luka, Jokic. I want to put Giannis in that conversation. Wemby is in that conversation. Those are probably the five best players in the world. And on any given night, those guys can win you any game, right? Any game at any level. So, you know, I think Shea is excellent. I don't love how he plays. I don't love how he goes about. When he is just attacking and he is just playing straight up basketball, he is legit fun to watch. But that's really rare. Those games are few and far between. So I'm with you. I'm not going to go so far as to say that Shea is overrated. I'm not going to go so far as to say that he sucks or he's a fraud or he's this or he's that. He's 100% earned his spot in that conversation for best in the world. I just wish he played basketball a different way. Nope. All right, let's scroll all the way up and see if we have any comments from at the very top here. TBD, TBD 1613 writes, sorry, but Pelinka needs to be fired. 2 years of draft picks with zero results, awful trades, needs to go. Yeah, I mean, like, I wouldn't mourn Rob being fired. I think he obviously deserves a whole bunch of credit for trading for Luka. He deserves a whole bunch of credit for winning the championship with that 2020 team. I think he deserves a whole bunch of criticism for how he's handled the roster since that 2020 team, and specifically just kind of riding out the string with LeBron. As LeBron is held off Father Time, I think it is like riding out the string without necessarily adding resources to the organization has put them in the spot that they currently find themselves in, where they have a fairly mid roster with, you know, not a whole bunch of resources to improve it. And that's even while, like, that's even after trading for Luka at a consensus, a consensus discount. So yeah, I think Rob, whenever he steps away, however that happens, that that postmortem is going to be it's going to have to be nuanced. It's going to be complicated. I think it's mostly going to be kind of disappointing. All right, I'm going to go ahead and get out of here. We have this storm rolling in and I don't want to like have it just, you know, so I'm just going to get out of here. I am going to take note of some of the questions from the comment section over the course of this thing and maybe come back to it. Looks like the season is going to end fairly soon. So that gives me plenty of time to go back in and find some questions from Twitter, find some questions from this chat and answer as many of those as I can at a later date. But I want to enjoy the rest of Jen's Mother's Day. A happy Mother's Day to all of you out there. Make sure you guys give your moms a hug. I miss mine dearly because I live 2,000 miles away from her. And FaceTime is really difficult this time of year. It doesn't do enough, especially as I get older and she gets older. So please give your moms a hug. Treat them well. They are heroes. And I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.